Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Hallowell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with print media. The movie Monte Carlo. Do you remember that? It's 10 years, baby. And we're also going to check in with Nicolas Cage and his iconic film about himself.
Incredible Great. Cinema on today's podcast. This is actually the big picture. They should watch The Rack, methinks.
Yeah, they should. Guys, follow us on Twitter if you are so inclined. We're at teatime_33. And then for Amelia's brain on Instagram, we're at teatimepod. Okay, before I get in the show, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
All right, Tea Time is checking in with print media. I'm going first, and I would like to say before I say my little segment that I don't know what I'm talking about, okay? I am just a mere person observing, reading print media, okay? I'm not even a media person, but I digress. I'm going to be covering Dua Lipa in Vanity Fair. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read it. I'm not going to lie, I was a tad underwhelmed at both what was covered, the photos, what she like gave up of personal info. And you know where it's underwhelming is because no news outlets picked up any of her quotes besides this one thing that she said where Anwar Hadid posts ugly photos of her. And like that was the one piece that everyone drew out and the rest...
That's how you know it's a stinker. If that's it, then
yeah. Like it was interesting and I love her so much. So I read it and I had some degree of enjoying it. It kind of talked about her family history and her upbringing, her political engagement, which was interesting. But the rest was just not, I don't know. I didn't get a lot from it. And also the photos I was underwhelmed. I don't know. Did you guys get a chance to look at this?
Yeah, I agree that the interview was meh. I also was like very disappointed with the photos. Like if you are doing a professional photo shoot and the professional photo shoot is more boring than someone's Instagram feed, like you need to reconsider.
Right.
You know,
Kate,
like
that's exactly what I'm saying.
Her vibe is so fun. And like, I'm not saying she's like this groundbreaking, like Lady Gaga, like out here, you know, with these new fashions, new trends, whatever. But like, they really like dumbed her down into like this kind of like pinup, boring, basic Instagram model vibe. And I was like, she wears more fun stuff than this, like to Trader Joe's on her Instagram. You know, like why make her more boring and seem and like look and be more boring and older than she is?
And all the photos were like so one note. It was so muted, really neutral colors, kind of like washed her out. And I guess the last big thing that made the news was that performance of hers. I forget what award show that was, when she was in that pink outfit and she fucking killed it, was dancing all around.
It was the Grammys, baby.
The Grammys. And then you got, I don't know, I was just like, damn, I wanted at least maybe a fun photo shoot or some inside knowledge about her that I didn't.
Like I would just, this goes for any magazine cover of all time. Like I would so much rather it be ugly than be boring, you know, like just take a shot, like you're Vanity Fair and you have this beautiful young pop star that you can do anything with. Like you don't have to put her in beige and sit her on a couch, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well said, Kate. Well said.
That's how I feel.
Next one, Amelia.
Yes, I took this one because no one else. wanted it. So I'll be honest, I did not read it because I don't care about these people. But
that's fair.
But I did read like a little People magazine article that kind of summed up the most important part. So as you know, doing all the real work here, the real journalism. So Chip and Joanna Gaines from, you know, they have the Magnolia table at Target and isn't it Fixer Upper?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like the third thing they're known
for. Oh, sorry. Fixer
Upper. Yeah. Target line first, everything else second.
Well, the Target line is, I mean, that's huge. And also, every time I go into Target, I'm always like, I come in and then it's always to the right. Yeah. It's always to the right. And it's always like these fake planters and the stuff looks cute. Like, I will actually give them, I'm like, damn, okay. Okay, maybe. If I move to like Long Beach or something. Anyway, So they did a Hollywood Reporter cover / profile, and you know, they just talked about quitting Fixer Upper, which is sad if you like that show. I've seen it once and they are likable people. I will give them that. And then they also talked about accusations of being racist and anti-LGBTQ. And they were like, that stuff keeps me up all night. Even though they did like donate money to Chip's sister's school board campaign and she was against critical race theory. And I it's just like, okay, there's a lot of excuses and no real answers that they gave. And they're just like, sure. Oh, we're trying. And, you know, and then she brings up being half Asian and she's like, my mother, this is tough for me. And I'm just like, okay, all right, all right. But, you know, it's like they're non-answers. And I don't, these people, I don't care about them. And I'm sorry.
I'm sorry that you had to talk about that.
I wanted to discuss why are they on the cover of THR. It was kind of my main, my main thing for putting this in here. I know that they're big, but like, are they, you see it in the grocery store and you buy the magazine because they're on it big? Like, is there a portion of America that loves them that we just like aren't in touch
with?
Yes,
I think middle America loves them. And I also think if you love, and a lot of HGT is like, it's kind of like the Food Channel. You don't think people watch it, but actually everyone watches it. And I know so many people like our age who love HGTV and find these two people to be so soothing. And apparently they're making the Magnolia Channel, which will be on like Discovery Plus or something. Yeah. So that's why I think they were on THR. But like, I don't know. They're just for a certain subset of people. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
Didn't Joanna Gaines do J-Lo's house?
Well, they're friends.
Did we discuss that?
Wasn't there some paparazzi photo where they were house hunting together? Do you guys remember this, like in Malibu?
Yeah.
I'll have to look this up before I'm speaking on my butt.
I want to see what would bring me in on them would be like a Bennifer, Chip and Joanna Gaines, like double date at Nobu.
Oh, I love that.
You know, like let's get those paparazzi pictures and then we can talk.
Sure. Yes.
That's how I feel.
Last one.
All right. Last one. I just am really excited about this. Naomi Osaka is on the cover of Vogue Japan this month. Ooh. And I have, yes, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Louis Vuitton. I think sometimes that they have like the ugliest clothes I've ever seen in my entire life. But Naomi is in Louis Vuitton on this cover. She's in like this swimsuit. She's got these like orange pants, Louis Vuitton bag. She's got like some Nike, some, and I just love when they dress athletes to be like very powerful, but also very beautiful on these covers. This is like the exact opposite of the Dua Lipa thing where they like took her strengths. We're like, why do people like Naomi Osaka? And then like, how can we showcase this in like a fashion sort of way? You know, there's a lot of movement. She's got these really long extensions. She just looks really strong, really beautiful. She talked about how she's going to represent Japan at the Olympics. She's really excited to play for her home crowd in Tokyo. And it's just really exciting. Like, I just felt the patriotism, like, leave my body as I was reading this. I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to root for Naomi Osaka. Like, go Japan.
Yeah. This girl is on a fucking roll. I have ordered her sweet green, Naomi Osaka green menu recently. I almost bought a Frankie's bikini because she did a collab with them as well, which is saying something because those bikinis are expensive. But she's getting the bag and I fucking love it. It's great.
Good I'm so her. Excited to watch her and root for her. And she just looks incredible. This shoot is really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Really redeemed Louis Vuitton in my eyes. I was like, okay, 1 point for you. Like, you get a pass this time around.
There you go.
And yeah, just can't wait. Just great cover shoot. International. I was going to like have this whole take about how we should pay more attention to like these international magazine covers because like sometimes they're really, really good like this one. Yeah. And then I was looking up international covers. And I think, believe it was like Vogue Philippines had Iggy Azalea this month. And I was like, I saw that. Goes down the drain. Let's save that for another week. But yeah, yeah. Naomi Osaka, love her. Love it.
Yeah, we ended this category on a high note. I like that.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can upgrade your home with up to $2,400 off select kitchen packages from top brands like Maytag. Enhance your kitchen with the exclusive Maytag French door refrigerator and fingerprint-resistant stainless steel, only at the Home Depot. And with dual power filtration on the Maytag tall tub dishwasher, you can skip soaking and scrubbing. Right now, get Memorial Day savings up to $2,400 off select kitchen packages at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Pricing valid May 16th through June 5th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
With Capella University's FlexPath format, you can set your own deadlines, learn at your pace, and access most coursework from anywhere at any time. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
All right, next category, not worth the tea. This week in social media / miscellaneous mashup. Big news for tea time. Cardi B is pregnant.
Yay!
With her second child. So happy. Culture is the cutest little kid I've ever freaking seen. We love Cardi B. You know, Offset. Not so sure, but she announced her pregnancy during the BET Awards. She like came out and she's very pregnant. It was like costume that showed her full belly. And then she just has been posting on Instagram like a couple of photo shoots. They are beautiful and stunning, and Offset may not deserve her in a second child, but whatever. We're happy for her. And yeah. Any thoughts
just
on
her.
This?
Well, just, you know,
I know.
Keep our good vibes in her belly's direction.
Yes.
And nowhere else.
Yes.
I agree. Very exciting. And extremely not worth the tea. The teaser trailer dropped yesterday for Camila Cabello's Cinderella on Amazon Prime. And it's kind of like Cinderella girl boss. She like owns a dress shop. Because why not? But the teaser poster that came out for it shows Camila Cabello holding like a shoe, and someone tweeted out and was like size 19, because it is like, it's so, if you look at the shoe, obviously it's bigger for the purposes of this poster. And so she's like holding, it's like me or Liz in like the clearance of like Macy's, trying to like find a cute shoe that's not in a size, whatever. I wear size 11. I'm not going to say what Liz wears. Anyway, and it's just like
I don't wear bigger than 11. Okay. I don't.
Clear the record. Okay. I'll speak for myself. It's like me in a Macy's trying to find a nice shoe for prom. And I'm pulling out these high heels and they're the size of my head. And it's like, you know what? You just can't. And that's what it looks like.
The pointed toe pumps are where they get you, because the pointed toe adds another inch and a half, 2 inches, and then it really elongates it. This is not her fault. But she's a small woman. I don't think she has a large foot.
Totally agree with the toe thing. I mean, I don't have large feet, but it adds more inches. You're right.
How did this turn into all of us talking about our feet? I feel like someone would pay good money on the internet to hear us talk about our feet. But okay, let's move on and not talk about feet any longer. Kate, what's the next one?
All right. Really quick, I just have to tell you that this movie is happening. It was announced by @DiscussingFilm on Twitter that The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is a movie that will release on April 22nd, 2022. Wow. And the film follows Nicolas Cage as Nicolas Cage, who attends the birthday party of a dangerous superfan played by Pedro Pascal and is then recruited by the CIA to save the world. Just incredible across the board. A pluses, 10 out of 10. I will see this movie. I can't wait to see this movie. It looks insane, sounds insane. And I think cinema will peak on April 22nd, 2022.
It feels like this is two different movies. I think the attending a birthday of a dangerous superfan, I don't know how he would then be recruited by the CIA to save the world, but
unclear.
I guess we'll have to see.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, we'll can't have freaking to see. Wait.
Oh my gosh.
Next one, Amelia.
Just some quick Britney updates. We won't get into it like we did last time because there's just too much information. But a judge, Judge Brenda Penny, the same one from last week, denied a request to remove Jamie Spears from the conservatorship. But this was actually a request from a November hearing. So it wasn't, I don't think, related to the one that happened last week. It's very confusing. Mm. It just shows you how slow the judicial process is also. Mm-hmm. And then just briefly want to touch on this freaking statement by Jamie Lynn Spears, who is the younger sister of Britney Spears. If you remember, Jamie is the father, Lynn is the mother, and then they had a child named Jamie Lynn.
That is the most confusing shit of all time. I've been reading these articles and I get lost every time.
It's very confusing. Anyway, so she released a statement on her Instagram and she had to turn off the comments because people were saying, like, how dare you do this to your sister, blah, blah, blah. And she was saying, like, I don't care. I just want my sister to be happy. All I've ever done is support her. And, you know, she can run away to the rainforest and have a zillion babies in the middle of nowhere. Or if she wants to come back and dominate the world the way she has so many times before. So she's talking out of her butt, trying to absolve, I guess, not really, because she didn't really refute anything. I mean, she was just like, I love her and support her. And it's just like, okay. And she's also saying, like, I never took any of her money, when there is actual evidence that she used money for flights. And then there's also this whole thing with the trust where she was made in charge of one of the trusts. And then she wanted to take the money away from the trusts for Britney's sons and put it in her own trust. It was just like very complicated and messed up. And it's like, why would you do that? That doesn't look great on paper and just in general. So Jamie Lynn, stop. You're embarrassing yourself. And clearly, you know, Britney called out everyone in her family. So, I mean, there's really, you know, she's implicated. Sorry, Jamie Lynn. Like, I can't. It's just like she would have nothing if it weren't for her sister. So I'm just, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, sorry, that was kind of all over the place. But so I'm sure everyone saw the Lil Nas X performance at the BET Awards, which was really cool. He had a really fun, like, Egyptian pharaoh kind of performance of Call Me By Your Name, Montero. And at the end, he kissed one of his backup dancers. And it was another guy. And, you know, that was huge. And Madonna, a freaking Madonna, God damn her. She had to make everything. She has to make everything about her. So she saw, you know, she clipped a photo of Lil Nas kissing one of his backup dancers and then put a photo of her kissing Britney Spears from the MTV Music Awards 1,000 years ago with like a hashtag, I did it first. Like, are you fucking kidding me, woman? You have nothing else to do than to say, let me insert myself.
I know.
It's just like,
congrats to Madonna, who invented gay kissing.
Well, it's just, seriously, the 2000s. It's
like what? First of all, you aren't even gay. So like, well,
exactly.
I don't,
it's just like, what Madonna did was queer baiting for the male gaze. Right. And what Lil Nas X did was express his sexuality as a queer black man, which is something we rarely see. Right. And it's like, it's not all about you, Madonna.
Right. Like during Pride Month on an award show, he was like expressing his own sexuality in his performance.
You can see he tweeted back at this Pop Crave article that said this and said, me and Madonna are friends. It's just a joke. And it's like, I know Madonna's probably a scary person in the industry and you got it. Like, but regardless, you just shouldn't have said shit and let him have his moment, even if they are friends. It turned into about her.
Exactly.
So
she had to make it about her, which, you know, I don't like, when was her last hit? I don't like years, like decades ago. And
Amelia's canceling Madonna.
I'm sorry, but
right
it's
now.
Just like, you can make this statement, but you can't make a statement about Britney's conservatorship.
Right.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, just like Jeff Bezos, get her on the rocket ship with you. I mean, honestly.
I feel like Amelia, you've had to talk about a lot of things this episode that you don't like talking about and make you mad. I'm very sorry about that.
Sorry.
But it's going to get better right now because this is our real bread and butter. Cringe mode of the week. This week, we are covering Monte Carlo because it is the 10-year anniversary, apparently, of this movie coming out. So let's do it. Kate, you want to hit the plot?
Yes, I believe I am the only Tea Time member who had seen this movie before this podcast. And thanks to my friend Nadine in college, I've seen it a million times because she, for some reason, made us watch it a lot. Monte Carlo, a cinematic classic, follows Selena Gomez, who graduates high school and gets ready for this trip to Paris. She's going with her friend, Katie Cassidy, who she works at a diner with. She's a few years older. And at the last minute, her parents, including Annie McDowell, are like, hey, actually, you need to take your more responsible stepsister, Leighton Meester. So they all go on this trip to Paris at the last minute. And it turns out that there is a British heiress that looks exactly like Selena Gomez. Classic. I hate when that happens. And they switch spots, of course. And Selena Gomez and squad ships off to Monte Carlo, gets involved in this whole thing. There's like a fucking like heir, like, is he a duke? Is he a prince? What is he? What's the guy?
Some rich man.
Just, yeah, sure. Some rich guy.
Some
we
sort
don't
of British guy who plays polo. And there's an Australian guy who gets into it with Leighton Meester. And then poor Cory Monteith is like chasing after Katie Cassidy, his Texan love. And there's just, you know, a fiasco of mistaken identity. And shenanigans in Monte Carlo. And yeah, great stuff.
Great stuff. We recently learned right before we started recording that Kate doesn't write anything down before she starts explaining
this plot. I can't imagine that was new information.
I don't know. Sometimes you
never prepare
complex things. This is pretty straightforward. For the highlights, this is just a stab in the heart. I have two highlights in here. One of them was, I have never seen Cory Monteith on screen besides in Glee, and it just tugged at my heartstrings. And I do I think he's a fantastic actor? Maybe, maybe not. But I just love, I think there's something about him on screen that's like very endearing and charming. And I was like, little tug on the heartstrings. That was nice to see him in this movie.
I agree. He's a very likable guy.
Yeah, he is. Sure. Even though he does a shitty Southern accent, which we can get into later.
We sure will.
Oh, gosh.
Amelia, what's your highlight?
Yes. Okay, so it's a really random scene, but there's like, they go to Paris and they're in their hotel room and they're like, this isn't what we thought it was going to be. We thought it was going to be really nice. And so they start looking out the window and they see across the way another guy staring out his window while he's in a bathtub wearing a beret, and he just like waves over at them. And I just thought it was funny because I don't know if you've ever seen the TV show All That, which was on Nickelodeon. And there's a sketch from All That, which I don't know how I've remembered for so long, because this is probably like 20 years old, starring Kenan Thompson as Pierre Escargot,
yes,
where he is in a bathtub in Paris and teaches you French words and phrases. So.
And he's in a yellow raincoat and a yellow hat, right? Yeah, I can picture it now in my head.
Mm-hmm. So that's what, it just brought me back to that. And I was like, oh, how nice. So
I love these highlights so far.
Very random.
This is actually part of the real movie. Okay, Kate, what's yours?
Yeah, so, you know, a classic moment in the movie is when they enter the suite of the British heiress, and they're, you know, going through the gowns and going through the makeup and all the things that they're excited to have. And they open this huge trunk, and it's like vintage Mac SponCon, and it's like this huge trunk of like those, you know, like that were popular in 2011, those like circular matte compacts where it was like one matte, like one compact for like one color of eyeshadow or like blush or powder or whatever. And it just took me back to like middle school, like show choir, where like all of the cool girls had those like big blocky matte compacts. And it was like the height of luxury to have MAC makeup like that. Just like as soon as they opened to that, like just smorgasbord of MAC makeup, I was like, had a little like gasp moment, like flashback to my middle school self.
Oh, that's cute. Well, on that note, I respect this movie as one of those kind of fun escapist teen girl films that were just really popular. I guess when like the early 2010s, late aughts, you know, there's nothing to this movie other than these three friends are on an adventure and something crazy happens. And I feel like there were a lot of movies that were kind of like that and allowed you to like live the characters' lives and be like, oh my God, that could happen to me. So I respect that, you know?
Yeah. It's the exact genre of like silly girl squad travel movie that I'm just like always going to enjoy no matter what. Like you put them somewhere exotic, like add some cute boys, some great clothes, something crazy that happens. And like it, as no matter how bad it is or how by the book it is, like I'm going to have a good time. That's just who I am.
Yeah. And this definitely, the cast, the three main girls are like definitely like heart of 2011 casting. Yes. Selena Gomez, Leighton Meester, and Katie Cassidy, Katie Cassidy, I'll talk about a little bit later. But yes, this is like a real 2011 movie and I do enjoy it. Moving into the lowlights, I think Kate and I both have something that like is a little bit more plot based, which of course the bar is low, but I did have to like nitpick this. So she does the switch. She gets away with being like an heiress for the entire movie. Like it seems like 5 days, like no one cares or checks in on this. And then at the end of the movie, the real heiress or whatever she is comes in. They're at this auction. Selena Gomez is like, it was all a lie. I'm just a girl. Yada, yada. I wanted to help the kids. And then the heiress is like, arrest her. She's impersonating. She held me captive. I was kidnapped. And then the police is just like, oh, she's having a little fun. Why don't you have fun? And like nothing happens right. to Selena Gomez at the end of this movie. And I was like, how does that work? How do you get away with that? There's like 7 things that she did wrong. And everyone in the movie's like, oh, like, who cares? Yeah. They're like, this is so fun. I just was like, some discipline, some action.
Some consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. My low light is also plot-based. So again, at the beginning of the movie, like this is Selena Gomez's graduation present, this trip to Paris with her friend, Katie Cassidy, who is like irresponsible. So at the last minute, her parents add stepsister Leighton Meester to the trip for the following morning. They spring this on them the night before they leave and are like, actually, she's going with you. Leighton Meester is like, what the fuck? They're like, what the fuck? And I just cannot imagine how pissed I would be to have an international trip sprung on me the night before. Like,
yeah.
Listen, even if you're not as much of a planner as I am, like you just can't. There are preparations that must be. I think Leighton Meester is literally in the same outfit on the flight, like when they leave. And I just can't. I can't imagine that. It stresses me out. Also, Katie Cassidy's like, I'm going on this trip. She's in the car with Corey Monteith, her boyfriend. And he like doesn't want her to go. He's feeling insecure about her being in the city of love without him. And he proposes in this van outside this bar that she's about to go into. And is like, don't go. Stay here. Marry me. She's like, okay, where's the ring? Like why would I do that? Show me the ring. Mm-hmm. And I dump him, queen. Like, this is hot girl summer.
Also, she's not going to be gone forever. Isn't it like a little trip?
It's a week.
That she's coming back on?
Right. It's not like she's going with any guys.
Insecure man.
It's fine, Corey. Relax.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. Also, he got very defensive when she was going, like, she was like, I want to go out and explore. He's like, I have everything I need in this truck right here. And I'm like, that's fine, but you can still travel.
Yeah.
Dang.
That's wild.
This is, again, a nitpick, but I feel like they could have made actual, like, Monte Carlo a little bit more, I don't know, beautiful and fun looking. It's a beautiful place. I know it is, but this movie for some reason didn't do it justice. I know they filmed all over, so maybe they were limited by that. But like, there is so much to see in that movie, and part of the like escapism teen travel movies, like, you know, all the shots of all the beautiful scenery and the city and all that. And I feel like they didn't do it. And there is this one weird beach scene where they're all laying out, like in this beautiful hotel they're staying at, right on the water. And I think they shot it on a gloomy day and there was no tide. Like, it looked like this like little swamp that they were like right laid up against.
Yeah.
And it was, the sky was gray. And I was like, this is an injustice to Monte Carlo. I know that place is beautiful. I don't know. Come on.
I totally agree. And when they like dropped into Monte Carlo, all the like aerial photography, it just looked so crowded and congested. And I was like, oh.
You got to romanticize it for the purposes of the movie.
Give us some like hills, you know?
Yes.
Speaking of romance.
Yes. Speaking of romance. So each girl gets a love interest in this movie. Selena Gomez gets like her boring, rich, posh boy, which is just a no from me. Corey Monteith, like, love you. But like we said, you need to relax. The only hot love interest in this movie is the blonde Australian guy who goes for Leighton Meester. And just like 1 for 3, just not good enough.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Do you know where he's from? What movie? What other movie he's in?
You know, I almost looked it up because he looked really familiar, but then I didn't because I'm lazy.
Oh, okay.
What was it? Yeah. My God.
Say it.
Say it. No, you say it.
He's Emma Roberts' love interest in that horrible Netflix
The Holiday.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amelia.
Oh, I know.
We didn't like him in that, did we? Wow.
No, we did not.
Tough. He peaked in Monte Carlo. That is
he
a tough
pompous
career.
Pompous in that movie. Oh my God, Amelia. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention.
Incredible connection.
Shocking. Anytime.
Yeah.
Whoa. We still, so. I will never learn his name.
No, right. We shall not.
Never.
Never.
No, remember? Nope. His name is Luke. And then we were like, it should have been a Hemsworth. Remember this? And then there is a Luke Hemsworth. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Good stuff.
We'll keep moving. I think a main low light that all of us had was these damn accents. And I know it's tough. I can't do an accent to save my life. Although you'd think a pit actor on an actual movie would get some coaching. Maybe she did. There's both Selena Gomez doing a British accent and then Katie Cassidy, Corey Monteith, and kind of Leighton Meester doing a Southern Texas accent. None of which works, really. I think the problem maybe with like Katie Cassidy was she leaned in too hard.
Mm-hmm. Too hard.
And then it was very obvious when she kind of slipped up and said something that was like not full send Southern accent. The way they just go in and out of this is
oh
just
my God.
Drove me mad.
It's kind of wild that the director didn't stop them and go, you're doing your regular accent. We need you to go back to the Texas one.
Right, right.
You gotta commit.
You've got to go. Gomez is not innocent in this either. She's supposed to be British when she's playing the heiress, whatever. Mm-hmm. There was one scene, I wrote this down, where she's talking to someone in a British accent. And then new person comes in and she turns and she's like, oh, hey. And like in a complete, like the Selena Gomez Wizards of Waverly Place way. And I was like, this is...
Nope.
You can't turn that on and off. You gotta
fully
commit.
I agree. And I think Katie Cassidy was, and God love her, but I really think she was the worst.
Yes.
She did the real good, like sweet, like I'm from Texas and I'm just like a small town girl. But then literally in the same scene, she'll be like, oh yeah, so I think you should totally date him. And then she'll be like, oh wait, wait. I mean, okay. And you're like, what the fuck?
That's what I'm saying. They shouldn't have leaned in so hard which way, because then it wouldn't have been as noticeable.
So it's tough. Bad. Like it is
also Corey Monteith did it too. He's like, me and my truck will follow you wherever you go. And then he'd be like, hey, I'm looking for this girl in Paris. Do you know? And I'm like, Corey. Corey. Please.
Nope. Yeah.
That was a struggle.
It was a struggle. But you would think that someone on set would be like, hey, you're doing it again. Can we cut and reshoot?
Where's the continuity producer, whoever is that on set?
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be someone.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Last one.
Last
if you can even believe
light.
It.
Yeah. One more. But okay. So I know I said this movie was fun and an escapist teen girl movie. And I still believe that. I still stand by that. But I will say this movie is just like kind of generally really boring. Like nothing big happens. Like we don't even get more of a backstory to the rich heiress. Like we just know she's a bitch. And it's just like, okay. Anything else?
I think
they
split it up too much between the three characters. They like tried to have too many things going on, so then we didn't get anything from anyone really.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they don't go deep enough into some of these plot lines, and it just ends up being boring. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really happy you said that. I thought I'd be alone in that, but this movie's a little bit slow. And even the climax where the heiress comes in, like I said, everyone's like, everybody's together now. Great. And that was it. It was
end.
Like really
scene. Yeah.
Scene. Okay. What is age the best and the worst? There's a couple here. I think the worst, not to be mean, but I think Katie Cassidy, I saw being a big star when I was watching her on Melrose Place.
Ooh.
She was clearly cast second in this movie. And she has not done a lot like with her face on screen, but then I was stood corrected because she's been in Arrow for like many years. So she still is like working and like getting a check from Hollywood, so I shouldn't say that she like completely fell off the face of the earth, but I thought she was like the moment for a moment, and then it kind of like fizzled out.
Yeah. I mean, of the three girls in this movie, she definitely has done the worst.
Yes. Yes.
Sad.
I agree. And then the best, a timeless plot, a switcheroo, look-alike, classic, kind of heist movie.
Gotta respect
maybe the most,
it.
Maybe the most interesting part was there was this like necklace. But that even wasn't yeah, that exciting. But yeah, this we have covered, I think, maybe 2 to 3 movies that like follow this basic plot line in Cringe Mode so far.
Hell yeah.
Works every time.
It really does. Agreed. I totally agree. I would say best, it made me want to travel to Europe. Like even when they missed the bus, their little tour bus, I was like, oh, fun, a tour bus. And I don't know. Yeah. Just looking at like the Eiffel Tower, which I know is just like, okay, the Eiffel Tower, like get original. But I loved it. And I was like, God, I love traveling. And oh my God, I want to go to Europe. Yeah, we're starved. I will take any little bit of travel I can get, but I would love Europe. Yeah.
Agreed. All right. My last, I think this actually aged the best, which then means it aged the worst. The outfits in this movie for 2011 did not age badly, which first I was like, they still like hold up pretty well. But then, in my opinion, this just means that they didn't go hard enough. It's not like, you know, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, where we were like, these outfits look insane now, but it's because they went so very hard. I think they were just boring. It was just boring fashion in this movie, which then translated to it looks fine today because it looked fine then, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Basics. You know what I read while we're on this category is that Nicole Kidman and Julia Roberts were originally the stars of this movie.
What?
And then the team decided to completely scrap it and shoot from like a younger lens, which kind of changes the entire way I think about this movie.
Wait, what?
This would have been a little bit like Under the Tuscan Sun kind of vibe, I think, instead.
Wait,
or
now I want that. Huh. Damn.
Okay.
I know what could have been. Also, there's a certain highbrow energy that those two bring that
maybe
would have altered the plot. But anyway, let's do MVPs. Amelia, who you got?
Wow, I'm not over that. Okay. I would say, you know who I really enjoyed watching during this? Leighton Meester. Mm-hmm. Give her more roles. She plays a great, like, stick in the mud, like, I don't want to do this kind of person. She's practical, but then she opens up, you know? She decides, I will have some fun. And I don't know, I think she's just really charming and she steals any scene she's in. And again, I just would love to see her in more stuff.
Yeah, I miss her.
I'm sorry to bring this into the fold, but this character arc is almost identical to her character arc in a little movie called Country Strong. And she has the same journey. So if you're looking for more of that kind of content, watch Country Strong. Kate, who's your MVP?
I got to take Selena Gomez. I miss her in roles like this. I miss her being just like cute, fun actress. I know. I mean, she obviously has a ton of pop hits and that's kind of where her focus is these days. But like, where is her Netflix deal? Let's get like Selena Gomez and some Netflix rom-coms again, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Why not?
I agree.
Yeah.
My MVP is going to that Australian guy, Luke, who just carried all the romance on his back, even though there's many eligible men in this movie.
He redeemed himself.
He carried it. Yeah, he really did. Good also, Leighton Meester definitely ended up like the best off of all of these people.
Definitely.
At the end. All right, lightning round before we move on. Was Monte Carlo better or worse in general than The Princess Switch, Amelia?
I would say this is a tough question because if you remember, The Princess Switch has the Christmas atmosphere that it can fall back on. And I think that just kind of makes you see it with rose-colored glasses. You're like, oh, Christmas, and oh my gosh, there's a princess. Like, so that is a big get for that film. But I think overall, Monte Carlo is the better movie because it actually tries. You know, it's not joking.
Absolutely agree. I think credit to The Princess Switch for making this genre work, like in modern times, because this movie falls apart if you add technology, cell phones, any form of communication, the internet, like it really falls apart. So like it's tough for The Princess Switch to make that work nowadays. However, Monte Carlo is so much better, like so much better. I mean, it's not incredible, but it's better planned out, better acted, like better cast, just overall better.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let me ask you this. Were there better or worse British accents in Monte Carlo than in Princess Switch, Amelia?
I don't know. I understand that she kind of flew in and out with the British accent, but I was like, Selena Gomez, I believe it. I'm more concerned about Katie Cassidy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of think Vanessa's British accent is better. It's been a while since we watched The Princess Switch, so like I'm not positive.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're both pretty bad. I think Vanessa was more consistent. I don't know that she went in and out quite as much as Selena. So I think I'm going to give it to Vanessa.
Yes. I was really torn about this answer and I thought about it for a long time and it ultimately led me to like, it is just very hard to pull off a British accent. When I see Selena Gomez's face, I just can't see someone British out of that. And same with Vanessa Hudgens. So like they could have given it their all and they probably did. And I still won't have connected, which makes me realize I need to do some research on like actual American actors or actresses that pulled off really excellent British accents because we have not covered that in Grinch mode yet. Okay, Amelia, would you rather fake a British accent or a Southern accent?
I would say fake a British accent because my Southern accent is too offensive, like Katie Cassidy's.
I think that's the answer, right?
I don't know. I think I would go with Southern just because, like, I have family members that kind of have the, like, you know,
the twang.
Slightly more Southern twang.
Yeah.
I think just, like, my heritage makes me better at the Southern accent. Plus, sure. British is just... It can go wrong in so many ways.
Yes. Before True. We started the pod, I thought for 2 seconds about introing it in a really shitty British accent as a nod to Monte Carlo and then thought better of that.
Oh,
I think you should have.
Me too.
You guys, last one. Is this better or worse than the Olsen twins' passport to Paris?
Okay, I posed this question when I totally forgot this movie was about Monte Carlo. Like, I know it's in the title, but they were doing so much crap in Paris that I was like, wow, this reminds me of Passport to Paris. So I apologize. Yeah, but just in my opinion, nothing beats Passport to Paris. So, yeah. Sorry.
I've never seen it. I've never seen any of those Olsen twins ones.
Kate.
I know.
I forget that you were only allowed like 5 minutes of TV time growing up. You couldn't squeeze all that in, but you missed a lot. I'll tell you that.
We'll have to do that one of those one of these days.
Yes. Yeah.
Educate me.
Yeah. It's really juvenile. Like we'll really have to reach back, but I guess we did the High School Musical and stuff. So it's in our house, I suppose.
Nothing is beneath us, you guys, at this point.
That's true.
That's true.
Oh God. Okay. We're wrapping up the episode with Tea Time's unanswerable questions. Go ahead, Kate.
All right. Nathan Pyle on Twitter said, I found out yesterday that everyone remembers the one word that knocked them out of their big third grade spelling bee. And he said his was lament. There are already hundreds of answers to this question, hundreds of answers on Twitter, on various social media platforms. So my unanswerable question is, what was the word that knocked you out of your grade school spelling bee, if you remember it? And are you over it? Anyone? You remember?
I never participated in a grade school spelling bee, probably because I was not good at spelling. But I do remember gorilla was really hard to spell.
Mm, that's still hard to spell. Any of the double letters. You guys didn't have them? Kaya, did you have one?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Wow, this is the worst unanswerable question of all time. I thought everyone would know and everyone would have one.
But I can't talk about the iconic movie Aquila and the Bee, which I watched I was a kid.
I mean, Kiki Palmer, the original.
Kiki P.
Anyway, I feel like there was a certain area of America where like a third grade spelling bee was like a mandatory thing that you had to do. And we had to do it. We all had to gather in the gym and do this spelling bee. And apparently this is just totally unrelatable to all of you. But if
pretty
anyone
singular experience you
if anyone who's listening had to do this, my word was steeplechase. And
whoa,
I'm still pissed about it because the person in front of me, I thought spelled it correctly. I like misheard them. So I was like, well, fuck, how is this word spelled? So then I like had to add in a vowel or something. And then I was out. And then it turned out. And then also there was like this huge thing where somebody spelled convoy correctly, but they said it was wrong. So then like 20 kids in a row had like increasingly insane variations on the word convoy because they heard that person spell it right and they said it was wrong. And they were like, well, shit, how do you spell convoy? So then they knocked out like 20 kids in a row trying to spell convoy. And then they ended up being like, oh, shit, this one person had it right. And they had to add them all back in. So it was like a multi-hour event.
No.
In our gym. I just have a lot of traumatic memories from this, and I feel like other people do too, even though no one else on this podcast does. So just tweet directly at me if you identify
with sorry.
This. Whatever, you guys.
Wah, wah.
Whatever.
Okay. My unanswerable question is, what is Ed Sheeran's sense of humor? Who is Ed Sheeran, really? I don't know, because everything I learned about him is different than the thing I knew before. He was recently on The Late Late Show to, quote, promote his vampire anthem, Bad Habits. I don't know what that means, but...
I saw the video, and I actually didn't hate it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
You look good.
Anyway, he told James Corden that he has this running bit where essentially whenever he visits L.A., he stays with, quote, bestie Courtney Cox, which, like, question one is why are those, like, how does the celebrity world work? I don't know. And I've been doing a celebrity podcast for a while. Anyway, he has this running bit whenever he stays at her house where he orders Courtney Cox, like, an S&M leather gimp mask every time. He visits her home. So, like, it started because Courtney Cox was talking about how she can order and buy anything she wants on her Amazon Alexa device, which, like, I think everyone can. I think that's on every device. Right. But anyway, then he asked Corden, he's like, do you know what a gimp mask is? And then it's like, you know, the S&M leather gimp mask. Corden says, yes, I'm aware of them. Anyway, when Courtney Cox walks out of the room, Ed Sheeran uses the Alexa to order a gimp mask, and it comes to the house. Courtney Cox's assistant opens it, realizes what it is like, oh, this wasn't meant, I wasn't supposed to see this, puts it in her bedroom. Anyway, as I'm saying this even out loud, I'm like, this isn't a funny story. I don't know why you would say this on a pod, let alone a late night TV show. Anyway, now there's a running joke where he orders her a bunch of these masks and puts them all over the house. Hmm. And that's that. Like, that's the end of the story. It's like, okay. Like, what is that?
Ed Sheeran just doesn't make sense to me as a person. How do we feel about his music? Do we like, are we pro or anti Ed Sheeran as a podcast?
Oh, man. It depends.
I actually like his music a lot.
It's not bad. I mean, it's not bad. It's catchy.
Right.
I'm sorry. Shape of You and I Don't Care. Are bangers.
He had that really good album when I was in college and everyone was obsessed with him. And then like the backlash happened and now everyone hates him. And I feel like he's going to have another good album and everyone's going to like him.
Is it the one with the math symbols?
Yeah. The divide. Symbol.
Yeah.
On it. That was pretty good.
Yeah. And I don't hate this Bad Habit song. Okay.
Okay. There you go. It's we just don't. I just don't know what his personality is.
It's weird. He is weird, but
not for me to understand. I guess.
Go off. Yeah. I guess. What a creative.
Okay. This last question. I can't fucking wait. Amelia, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay. Thanks. I was just wondering. Do the Suns, the Phoenix Suns, have a good chance of winning the NBA Finals? I asked this question because Devin Booker is on this team and he is dating Kendall Jenner. And I just cannot, I don't want them to win solely because I don't want Kendall Jenner's grubby hands all over the Larry O'Brien trophy and like her Instagramming it with like a dumb caption like, congrats, like little heart face emoji, you know? My body can't handle that right now.
This is a good question. Kate, do you have thoughts on if the Suns will win the NBA Finals?
No, of course not.
Okay.
Damn. Not a single thought on that whatsoever.
Listen, let me tell you something, Kate. Some game ago, Devin Booker got hit in the face. He effed up his nose. One game he played with a little plastic clear mask. Apparently, it totally messed up his game. He went without it. And then last night, he got hit in the face again. And was in a lot of pain. So his nose is probably broken upside down, left ways, et cetera. Like, it just is probably so messed up.
Wow.
Kendall Jenner, of course, got the best nose job in the Hollywood game. So, like, no issue there. She will just go ahead and set up that appointment after the finals are done. But obviously, our collective tea time knowledge on the NBA is extremely limited, so we had to call in an expert. Our friend, our colleague, Kevin O'Connor is here with the official answer to this question.
Yes, the Phoenix Suns will win the NBA Finals because Devin Booker has found a perfect balance in his life. He has a great relationship on the court with Chris Paul and all of his teammates. And he also has a great relationship off the court with Kendall Jenner. He's got beautiful chemistry in his life, playing basketball and in his own world. That's why the Phoenix Suns are going to be NBA champions.
There you have it. There's the final answer. You heard it here first. Thank you so much to Kevin for weighing in on this very pressing issue on Tea Time. Also, important announcement, we are off next week. We're doing Tea Time summer vacation. We will be back the following Friday. So I know you'll miss this content so much, but we'll be back firing on all cylinders soon.
Yes.
Thank you, Kaya, our producer. We love you very much. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alliwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer.